And we are a nation that is hostile to liberty and freedom and faith. We are a nation whose economy is floundering, whose stores are not stocked, whose deliveries are not coming, and whose educational system is ranked at the bottom of every list. We are a nation that in many ways has become a joke. But soon we will have greatness again. It was hardworking patriots like you who built this country, and it is hardworking patriots like you who are going to save our country. There is no mountain we cannot climb. There is no summit we cannot reach. There is no challenge we cannot beat. There is no victory we cannot have. We will not bend. We will not break. We will not yield. Ever, ever, ever. We will never give in. We will never give up. And we will never, ever back down. We will never let you down. As long as we are confident and united, the tyrants we are fighting do not stand even a little chance. Because we are Americans, and Americans kneel to God and God alone. And it is time to start talking about greatness for our country again.
Good morning and welcome to everyone that's tuning in from wherever you're watching. It's the 15th of October, 2022. This is the Great Steak Breakfast, episode 4. I'm Roan. Noah's here.
Yo.
Alan Jacoby, the host of The Great Divide, is with us.
Good morning, everyone.
Guys, before we get started, we can't forget to mention our partners. Two big ones, our heaviest hitters, MyPillow. Alan, I don't know if you heard, just this week, Mike Lindell hopped in the semi, drove it on down from Minnesota to South Florida, and gave out 20,000, not Hardee's cheeseburgers, MyPillows to Hurricane Ian relief victims. When you enter promo code STEAK at checkout, you're going to get and enjoy all the big savings they have at MyPillow. MyPillow.com/steak is the website. If you're more of a coffee person, enjoy the mornings. MyStore.com/steak. You can use the same promo code there and get 25% off your order. Well, Patriot Cigar Company's launched. It's, believe it or not, in the fields right next to where Mike Lindell picks his coffee beans. Alan pulls his
tobacco. They're neighbors.
Aged 3 years, hand-rolled. Sweet deliciousness. You enter promo code STEAK at checkout there. You're getting 15% off all orders over $100, free shipping, and a $10 e-gift card on every purchase. MyPatriotCigar.com, a premium smoke for freedom-loving patriots. Good morning, guys. How's everybody doing on this great Saturday morning?
Outstanding. Happy to be here.
Just living my best, MAGA extremist life over here in New York.
Ooh, okay. Dang. Mm-hmm. We saw Nancy Pelosi share portions of her documentary, the January 6th committee hearing on Thursday.
Why was she filming a documentary? That's weird.
So weird, right?
Yeah.
It's tied into her daughter too, right? Wasn't something with her daughter?
Yeah.
What is that about? I'm going to punch Donald Trump when he trespasses on Capitol grounds. And then her chief of staff was like, I was thinking the same thing or something like that. What is that about?
Whoever the peanut gallery lady that was in there with her, I would pay to see that.
Yeah.
Yes. I think that was her chief of staff.
No, yep. Perfect. That's better. Professional.
Yeah. You know, it's pretty interesting. We've come to learn on our Friday edition of the show yesterday of our podcast, Steak for Breakfast. We had on Devin Nunes and kind of Cash Patel via remote location. when we got into the January 6th, and if we can all remember, Devin Nunes was the chair of the House Intelligence Committee, and he sat on that for quite a number of years. And you know, when he was there, one of the things he talked about is this whole subpoena power that Congress has. And essentially, long story short,
subpoena coladas.
Basically, when Congress ends by January 3rd of this year, that subpoena will just go away. So even though Donald Trump says, you know, he'd like to entertain the idea of testifying and, all the other narratives that you're going out there, this is essentially not going to be anything. So we had the awful inflation numbers come out again on Wednesday, and that showed, you know, another quarter of over 8%, 8.2 nationally. We're living in like 20-ish out here in California. Alan's probably
thanks, Joe.
Yeah, in New York. And then
did it, Joe.
Right. We saw the interesting direction with the quid pro quo Joe, Saudi Arabia. He was trying to bully them in, saying we're going to be restricting military aid there. You're gonna have to update the border walls. We're to $31,785 million in military equipment yesterday.
Right. 31 even?
31 even. Going over to Ukraine. But you know, the Saudi Arabia thing was completely, so we talked about it on our show, Alan. The average time that most of the legacy progressive media gave the January 6th hearing was 8-ish minutes.
the new, compelling and rich.
You gotta love it.
The new inflation numbers, the issue between Joe Biden and Saudi Arabia, and Hurricane Ian all received less than a minute across the board on all the major news networks.
Wow.
So
yeah. It really is unbelievable. Yeah, and why, you know, there aren't too many Republicans that I've seen. Maybe I'm wrong, Ron. Maybe you've seen more that are in an uproar about this, you know, with Saudi Arabia and then with the oil and the statement that they made. And now, who was it? It was the, who was the spokesperson? Was it at the State Department talking about how they want to hold the military aid? Why aren't they going crazy about this as crazy as the Democrats went over about the phone call with Zelensky and Trump?
The players who were involved, one of the main chess pieces that was involved in the Ukraine phone call impeachment is one of the ones that were propping up as literally the George Washington of Europe. And it's an embarrassment. It continues to be. The whole January 6th thing was an embarrassment. All the testimony and stuff, the fake cop, Chuck Schumer saying that the Secret Service knew in advance, Cash Patel on our show telling us yesterday that he had to drive to like Western Virginia to pick up, what was it called? No Hop Fence.
Oh yeah. He went in the middle of the night to go just get a anti-climb fence or something. Yeah,
the fence that you can't scale to put up around portions of the Capitol where the police were going to be staged, right, as they do for every normal event. But Nancy Pelosi in her detail denied the week before
in her infinite wisdom.
Yeah, so you know, it was one of those, we just seen so much stuff that is nothing, but they make it like it's the real news. It's the same thing with all the, you know, we're going to be talking heavy on the elections today,
yeah,
and the midterms that are coming up, and we see that you know, all of the legacy progressive on the left news outlets are posting, you know, their polls of what's important. And even though most of them have begrudgingly moved the economy up to number one, they still keep gun control and abortion and all this other bullshit that doesn't really matter to anybody who's going to go out and cast a vote for America First on November 8th as like the most important issues. They don't talk about crime. They don't talk about the border. You know, they don't talk about the horrible education system, all the bad stuff that's going on, you know, coming off the COVID stuff. And they don't talk about any of that. They just want to talk about, you know, Republicans are going to end Medicare and Social Security and have no plan and want to, you know, criminalize abortion. That's essentially
right,
the Democrat platform right now. And as we're going to get into some of these races, what'd you see this week, Alan? There was a bunch of debates and some people rising and, you know, I saw some that were good. I saw some that were medium. I didn't see any Republicans who are running right now, either for a governor or senator who lost the debate yet. So that's
interesting.
But we'll talk about it. But what have you seen this week? I mean, you have a pretty big race in your state. You're out in New York State. And, you know, whether anybody wants to admit it or not, Lee Zeldin's moving closer and closer to the margin of error.
Yes.
Than anyone would have speculated he would be. And we still have, you know, 3.5 weeks until we're heading to the ballot box.
Yeah, and it's unbelievable. Seeing New York Republicans as galvanized as they are to vote out Kathy Hochul, the unelected governor of New York. But it's also really nice to see the amount of Democrats that are endorsing Lee Zeldin. Again, more, you know, 40-year Democrats, never voted Republican in their life, are waiting for November 8th to come out and vote for Lee Zeldin and some of the people running for Congress, like George Santos and Anthony D'Esposito, who are both looks like they have both have great shots of flipping seats in New York. We need Kathy Hochul out. I mean, she's unbelievably vile. She now wants to ride the coattails of Gavin Castro in California and ban gas vehicles, the sale of gas vehicles by 2035. Same thing. I mean, New York is like California 2.0 almost. But yeah, you know, one of the biggest out of New York that I focused on and was watching some last night was the Herschel Walker, Raphael Warnock debate. That was uh, That was pretty funny. The funny meaning, I liked when the debate moderator yelled at Herschel Walker for pulling out the sheriff's badge because he was showing his law enforcement endorsements. But Ron, I'm sure you have more information on that. And you were pretty heavily engaged in the articles and stuff. So what do you got on it?
Yeah, let's jump into this. You know, I want to stick with Lee Zeldin for a second. Then we will jump over to Herschel Walker, because I think he was probably the centerpiece of the entire week for America First by far. You know, so Lee Zeldin, he's currently, U.S. House representative. He's got a pretty good track record in Congress, extremely loyal and aligned with President Trump and America First policies, is kind of, you know, use the things that are meaningful to the people there, the economy, the jobs, the wages, the crime. And it's kind of stuck to those issues without really getting into like personal attacks. There's a lot of things you can attack Kathy Hochul on. And Lee Zeldin, for the most part, has just stayed away from it. He's talked about how Democrat and radical progressive policies on that city have essentially ruined it. It's virtually unlivable, especially in places like, you know, the main island and in the five boroughs. Crime is rampant. DAs everywhere prosecute no one. Yeah. Literally, you could do anything short of murder, and before the paperwork, the ink on the paper is dry, you're back out on the street. So to reoffend again. And it was so interesting this week, you know, you saw, well, Lee Zeldin himself was assaulted at a campaign event a few months ago, you know, right when he was getting out to really start to mobilize his ground game. But just this weekend, there was like a drive-by shooting in his neighborhood while he was out campaigning, and his two teenage daughters were home, and two of the people who were shot by the drive-byers went and hid under his front porch and returned fire before they did so. So, I mean, you know, Lee Zeldin's walking down his property showing like bullet holes in the fence of his house while his two teenage daughters are there. And I thought it was a really good, you know, still shot of what it's like to live in New York right now. Like, no one is unaffected. We've had the chief of staff for the current mayor, Eric Adams. He was assaulted at gunpoint and pistol whipped when he tried to tell his robbers who he was a few months ago. Don't you know I'm the mayor?
They hit him harder.
And it's just like, you know, you can't really avoid hiding from the results of the Democrat records, especially in these major cities across the United States, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Chicago's, Washington, D.C.'s, obviously New York City and places like that. We've gotten to a point right now to where we really need to get these things under control. And if we don't, we're going to see the continuing downtrend, one which we may not recover.
Right. And, you know, back to the Lee Zeldin shooting. So Lee Zeldin, I live in Nassau County on Long Island. Lee Zeldin lives in Suffolk County. He lives about probably a 40-minute drive from me. And his town, Mastic, Shirley area, there are some seedy areas. There are some very nice areas. He happens to live in the nicer area. But this was a blood gang shooting that they're finding out, which, you know, from neighborhoods of like Brentwood and Wyandanch, which are about 20 minutes away from him. And now they've saturated the area in little pockets because of the drug dealing and just normal gang activity, which, by the way, if we remember when Donald Trump was president, visited Long Island with then Congressman Peter King, and they had the gang task force. And when Donald Trump was president, the gang activity in New York, especially on Long Island, was I would say quelled to a degree, because the law enforcement, the agencies were given the tools, both local, state, and federal, and they were out there policing and they were out there doing, and you didn't see the gang activity that you're seeing now. And now, of course, right in front of Lee Zeldin's home, and where his daughters were doing homework and had to run upstairs and lock themselves in a bathroom, and bullet holes in his property. I mean, yeah, he was away in an event. Imagine being away in an event. Your daughters had to lock themselves in a bathroom, and then you're notified, oh, by the way, Congressman, the whole front of your house is now an active crime scene. You know, when I first heard of the shooting, I was wondering, oh, is this another assassination attempt by the nefarious left, like they like to do, you know, to SCOTUS justices? Who knows? But it turns out it's from crime. And I think that's the biggest issue in New York, is the crime, the cashless bail, how the Democrats love their criminals and want them out on the streets to vote, and the economy in New York. I mean, we're taxed to death. gas was dropping, you know, because Joe Biden was doing such a great job with the strategic petroleum reserves that gas was dropping to in where I am, $3.19 a gallon. And then in 24 hours, it went up to $3.49 right around the time he was on his hands and knees begging OPEC and the Saudis about their oil. So, I mean, if people aren't realizing, you can't tell us that the president doesn't have control over what happens with policy with the in reference to gas prices and then tell us, well, look what the president is doing by lowering gas prices and then begging for things to happen to keep the gas prices low before the midterms. I mean, I talk about this with James Curry from We the People Radio a lot on our Freedom Friday on Monday Madness show, and I tend to agree. I didn't at first that I believe after the midterms, I think we're going to see a spike in gas prices and energy prices like we've never seen before in our lifetime. I think I'm on board with that now.
I think the Saudis are driving them up right now because they don't want Joe Biden to be in power anymore. I don't think anybody does. That's pretty blatant. You know, they've abandoned essentially the world in regards to America first and leading by strength. U.S. policy, but that's neither here nor there. Congressman Zeldin was on with Fox News yesterday. I pulled a clip on it. He was talking on some of these points we were just elaborating on. Let's hear him.
And this is the reality right now, and it's a combination of pro-criminal laws that are getting passed, like cashless bail. You have district attorneys refusing to do their job, as we see stories coming from Alvin Bragg and others. You have lax judges releasing people back out on the street in cases where the prosecutor is asking for bail. And then you have an issue with mental health. People out on the streets, and they feel like they're in control of our streets. And as you point out, the original story up in Marist, why do you have convicted felons who are homeless there in that situation at
loaded
all?
Loaded up with guns and explosives in a hotel room.
Yeah, it's just, you know, when you use those things like it's come to our shores or it's come to your front door, like you can't get any more high profile who just lives in like the normal world as someone like Congressman Lee Zeldin. And literally he's having gang shootouts on his front porch. So it's gone, you know, it's starting to stretch out into the cities, out into the suburbs. And I'm pretty sure that nobody wants this trend to continue.
But remember, Roan, you know, we should be, because Joe Biden says we should be more worried about the nuclear Armageddon than getting carjacked or robbed or killed in our own driveway in our suburb home, which is the real issue. Not worrying about getting nuked by Russia. So they will not address the real issues, and they will just push these false narratives. But if we have a legit concern, no, we're extremists, we're conspiracy theorists. None of that matters, cuz that's not really happening. It's killing me. It's killing me.
No, I get it. And you know, it's just a complete narrative that's going to change after the midterms, I believe, because we're going to win back the House and Senate, and we're going to pick up quite a few quality governor seats. I mean, we see places in play, like you want to talk about the Senate, New Hampshire, Washington State, and Connecticut in play for the first time in decades. And then in governor's races where Democrats usually have comfortable leads or don't worry about, you know, Republican challengers due to the things like we've been talking about in our open right here. You know, these races are a lot tighter than they ever would be considered in a normal election cycle, which this one completely is not.
No.
So down yesterday in the Peach State, Herschel Walker and Raphael Warnock met up for their first debate. You know, a lot of people were really worried heading into this that Herschel Walker may not have been prepared or has polished as someone like an already sitting congressman, a senator in Raphael Warnock. However, since he's been on our show numerous times and we've had a chance to really talk to him about the issues in some extended segments, Noah, you'll pretty much agree there wasn't anything we ever asked Herschel Walker that he didn't really know about. And then he wanted to tell a story on how his life tied into like these issues that are affecting everybody, right?
Yeah, there was no pause. There was no like, you know, I need to think about my answer. It was just right off the cuff. Like, wasn't he
organic?
Was he in a car driving one point when we interviewed him? And he was just like, yeah, just good to go. Everything you asked, instantaneous response.
Yes.
Well thought out. Like, the guy's got his shit together.
The one show I guest hosted with you, Roan, where you had Herschel on your show, and he was in the car driving, and it was there from what I see, like that time, there's nothing scripted about him. He's you know, you can get past his heavy Southern accent you know, which people hold against him and make him sound uneducated, which they've literally said in articles, which is disgusting. He literally is an intelligent individual that knows what's going on, knows what the issues are. And he proved it again last night. He knocked the socks off of Raphael Warnock, and it was great.
Yeah, I pulled a couple clips off of that, staying kind of in the same thread. They were talking about crime and how it's kind of exploded in Georgia lately. And, you know, Herschel Walker, who's always been a backer of the blue and supportive of police, he's deputized in the state of Georgia.
Nice.
And actually, what Alan was talking about in the beginning of the show, he pulled out his badge and the debate moderator was like, we agreed before the show there's not gonna be a prop. And he's like, ma'am, it's not a prop. It's real. She's like, but it's a prop. Like, don't pull it out. We know, we understand that you're saying you back the police, but you don't need to pull it out. And he's like, it's not a prop. It's
I am the police.
There you right. go.
I am the law, lady. Like, shut up.
Let's hear
I
him
am the law.
Talking about crime.
Here, Senator Warnock talks about supporting law enforcement. It's sad because he's called them names. And because of the name calling he's done, the morale is down, recruitment is down, only because of what he's done. He's empowered criminals to think they're better than the police. And because he believes in no cash bail, is releasing prisoners, he don't protect the border, fentanyl is coming to this country, and also into Atlanta. 70% of the drugs coming from the border goes to Atlanta, Georgia. And he talks about the police. Now I have more sheriff that has endorsed me than anyone running in Georgia right now. And I even have some sheriffs here, and they've endorsed me because they know I have their back. They're going to have my back. So to listen to him say that after calling them name, I think it's a disgrace.
It sure is. And like I said, he came out swinging. He was very extremely strong and right down the middle on abortion. They even tried to bait him and saying like, oh, you know, let's look past the midterms. Donald Trump's, you know, weighing the option of running in 2024, and you know, yes or no answer. They wanted to like hem him up. He's like, all right, I'm gonna answer and then I'm gonna give my explanation. And he was kind of like, you know, yes, I support Donald Trump, and I support Donald Trump because he's been my friend for like 40 years. Like, why would I just not support him because you guys don't like him? And went into this whole other good one. But sticking to like the, you know, the big blows that were landed during this debate, it was another one where they were trying to pin him to that whole, you know, MAGA extremism and stuff. And Herschel Walker kind of did what you should do, rise above the low blows and stick to the issue, stick to the voting records. He hit him here on how the race is about Joe Biden and Raphael Warnock. Let's hear it.
First, I'd like to acknowledge my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. I'm one of 7 kids, born and raised in Wrightsville, Georgia. My parents taught me about faith, family, education, and the love of country. They also taught me about a good work ethic. And because of that, I found the America's dream. But this race ain't about me. It's about what Raphael Warnock and Joe Biden had done to you and your family. Tonight, he's going to try to sweet talk you that he's doing a good job, but his record speaks for itself. I'm here to tell you that they've raised your taxes, gave you high inflation. They even put men in women's sports. And I want to let you know that Raphael Warnock, if we give him 6 more years, think what he's going to do. So I'm here to fix it.
I like it.
I love it. I mean,
You know, I thought he had a great debate. There was not a doubt in anyone's mind. Alan, actually, I sent you an article before the show. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at it right now. It's from, believe it or not, MSNBC. It came out an hour after the Georgia debates. And you know, the title of it is Cocky Democrats May Be Counting Their Midterm Votes Before Their Cast.
Yeah, I got it right here. It's great.
So even though every fake news, you know, voter suppression poll that's out there is showing every Democrat in the country winning. We saw polls this week that showed Democrat retaining power in the Senate for the first time this election cycle. House races that we know, governor's races that we know are definitely going Republicans. They're saying Democrats are winning now. And then MSNBC reads the writing on the wall. You know, they were hoping for a complete retard with retard answers in that Georgia Senate debate, which is absolutely factual. And what they got was what we've been advertising, you know, these candidates as. They're well thought out. They don't need to go low. They're sticking to the issue. Listen, if you go off of where do you align with Joe Biden or how you voted over the course of since he's taken over the presidency, there's nothing you can do to lose. I mean, if you want to start going low, you just remind everybody that's cool. You want to say that I like had kids outside of wedlock, but how's the economy doing right now? How's crime doing right now? How's your kids' test scores? Do you even have jobs? What do the wages look like? What's the drug epidemic and homeless problems in your cities looking like? And then people kind of like Yeah, you know what? I don't know what. Before this guy found God, he might have been a little bit off the rails, but now it seems like he's pretty grounded and he's bringing the answers that I'm looking for to the table instead of just saying that he's a bad person.
Yeah, anybody that's in a position of power on the opposite side of any of these candidates that are on our team, basically, like, people don't seem to realize that, yeah, there's the entire sub-demographics of people who are completely riding for Biden. They're anti anybody who's on the pro-America tip. But there's so many more people that just aren't being outspoken about what's going on. Like, you know, it's like, I'll post some shit on Instagram or social media or whatever and like get a bunch of unfollows or whatever. And then you happen to track down one of the people that unfollowed you. Like, you just notice like, oh shit, that person unfollowed me. And then you look and they're friends with like five other people that I have private conversations with all the time. They're on the same page as me. They're just not outspoken about it. And that is what's happening in the United States right now. There's so many people that they agree with the things that are being said by our candidates, but they're not allowed, quote unquote, to come out and say it, but they're going to fucking say it when they vote.
They're afraid for various reasons. You know, I had this conversation with someone not too long ago. It's because my attitude is, listen, we have a country to save. And it starts on November 8th. We know one man is not going to save this country, and it's we the people. And those people that we're going to give jobs to and elect in these positions in the House and the Senate, we have to keep our foot on their neck to make sure that they're doing what they're supposed to do and upholding the Constitution and our rights and protecting us. So us as Americans, and I get people are scared because of their jobs. They're worried about putting food on the table, because if they come out politically and start talking about it, maybe the woke company or corporation they work for will can them and make them miserable. You know, their families, their friends. There are so many people, and I talk to people that say, I am so on board with this, but I can't say a word.
Yeah,
I can't say a word in my own house because, you know, a friend of mine told me, because of his liberal wife and two liberal college age daughters, he says, my family would literally disown me and not speak to me anymore. That's how explosive it could get. He mentioned something at dinner. They were out to dinner at a restaurant, and he made a comment, and his daughters just turned on him like pit bulls. And he's like, it's unfortunate that this is just because of what's going on in the country. And it's happening, but I truly believe in my gut that these people will make their voices heard on November 8th, and they have to. That's the most important thing that can happen. They Scott Pressler, who I know you guys know who he is, who goes around and gets people registered to flip seats from blue to red. He's actually really sick right now with a bed disease, blood disease. He's been unable to get out of bed for like over a month, but he's still working the phones and things like that. But he just put a thing out in Florida, an update yesterday, I believe, with the early mail-in ballots. And I think it was like 180-something thousand Democrats voted by mail. Or no, it was 190-something thousand Democrats voted by mail and 180-something thousand of Republicans that voted by mail. And he was saying how the Republicans are, you know, on par and trailing the Democrats with the mail-in voting. And my message to that is, anyone who's listening or watching and you're a Republican, do not vote by mail and make sure you're getting to the polls in person on November 8th. It's the most important thing you could do. Don't take the convenience of I'm going to mail in my ballot. No. And I have Republican friends that did it. And I said, what are you doing? Just get to the polls. It's not a big deal. You need a ride, I'll drive you. I tell people working in their communities, make sure older people, if they don't want to drive to the polls, go with them. Wait online with them. Buy them a cup of coffee. Relax. Hang out. Something. Do rally people in your neighborhood, your workplace, your church, whatever it is, to get people out to vote. Give them rides. Carpool service. I've been calling on every conservative-owned black car company, transportation company in the country, that they should be giving free rides to the polls on November 8th. No questions asked, and they should be set up for it. They should shut down their business because it means a lot for business owners to get people out to vote on November 8th. And every way, you have a taxi company, you got a bus company, figure it out and do it and get people to the polls. That's what they should all be doing. And it's get out and vote. It's so important. I feel like a broken record.
Yeah. No, knowing what we know now about how the voting system is completely corrupted and just dangerously compromised. Yeah. I mean, you might as well go to Vegas and play blackjack with your cards facing the opposite way. Like, that's what you're doing if you mail in your vote at this point. Like if you got a ballot in the mail, rip that shit in half. That way you're not tempted. Just go on voting day and cast your ballot. That's the only thing you can do. And I think if you have a mail-in ballot, they'll take it back at the poll, right?
Yes. You can turn it in. But I see people all the time.
Or you can fill out the ballot and turn it in at the polls. That's probably also okay.
Yeah. The last time I went in, I heard all the people around me saying how they either lost it or didn't get one, which means they probably voted several times already. But, you know, staying in the battleground and heading up to the Keystone State of Pennsylvania, we've got two races right there that are heating up. The gubernatorial, obviously, with Doug Mastriano, and then the Senate seat, looking to flip that one for America First. That's, you know, Dr. Oz is in the race. It was pretty interesting. I don't know if you saw on Thursday, Alan, but we talked about it on our show yesterday. Jack Posobiec has come around and finally has pseudo-endorsed Dr. Oz.
A pseudo endorsement from Jack Posobiec for Dr. Oz. I don't know if you put it on Twitter. I can't see because he still has me blocked on Twitter.
Oh, well, no, I posted that.
He must have just made a visible, like, disgusted.
Well, it's one of those things. So I was on Thursday morning. I was at home. I had taken my kids to school and I was getting ready to lay down. And I heard I had Big Head Charlie Kirk on in the background. And he had Jack Posobiec on. So obviously the segment was the equivalent of the driest sex you'll ever have. Two people who like to hear themselves talk, basically talking about how they like to hear themselves talk to each other. Yeah. They did get into the battleground state. We all know that Jack Posobiec's a huge fan of Doug Mastriano, as are we, as are a lot of people, because he just brings that good, wholesome goodness in addition to all the America First policies with him to the, you know, front of the ticket. But then they get into the whole Senate race and you know, it's easy to not say anything good about Dr. Oz and smash John Fetterman, which they did a little bit, but then got into it. And, you know, Jack Posobiec kind of said, like, you know, even though I wasn't on board with him, he wasn't, and I'm paraphrasing, horse in the race in the primary season, this is where we're at. And it's all about winning these seats, flipping the Senate, stacking chips. And I was like, oh, good Lord, let me go put the breaking news all over my social medias. And then, you know, he had put out a tweet yesterday that basically paraphrased what I just said. And I thought it was really good because, you know, here's the deal at the end of the day. Major influencer, almost 2 million followers on Twitter, in addition to all his other social medias that he's very active on. Again, his voice only counts to those people listening in the state of Pennsylvania, but we have no idea how many they are. The more we can get to understand that Dr. Oz is not the most MAGA candidate, but he's already been assured, you know, to Donald Trump, the things he's going to do, vote America First, not going to vote for Mitch McConnell in Senate leadership, and then sends a larger slate of America First candidates to Congress in January. He was on yesterday with Dana Perino, and they were kind of talking about this whole debate thing. So if you're not knowing what's going on in Pennsylvania regarding the Senate debates there and why they haven't had one, obviously due to John Fetterman's massive disability following his stroke, first they weren't going to debate. Then they were going to debate on the 14th, which was yesterday, did not happen. 60% of the entire electorate in the state of Pennsylvania will have cast their votes by the 25th of October when they have finally decided to debate. And when they debate, John Fetterman will use like a closed captioning machine that will basically rewrite the questions that he could see printed that the moderator and Dr. Oz are saying, and he'll have extended time to answer them, which is going to cut down the amount of content or questions or topics that they could hit during the debate.
You mean extended time for his team to text him the answers?
Pretty much. So
how is he going to get anything done on the Senate floor when you have to yield back your time and you have time to talk and respond? How is he going to overcome that representing the people of Pennsylvania? And how can he do that with all of these? It seems like it's worse than Joe Biden. I mean, he doesn't have. Is he going to have teleprompters sitting there with his staff on the Senate floor? I mean, it's ridiculous.
Well, I mean, if it's the State of the Union and Joe Biden's there, yes. But in regards to, I understand what you're saying, and I'm not trying to make a joke out of it. The thing is, shame on the DNC, the DNCCC, and all the other organizations that allowed this to get where it was. We should have a much more competitive race with someone who's actually fit to serve there. And we don't have it. So this is where we're at. They're going to debate on the 25th. It's going to be a lot of different stipulations. A lot of people are asking, what should Dr. Oz's approach be? Let's hear him talk about John Fetterman first, and then we'll get into that.
I have tremendous compassion for what John Fetterman has gone through. I'm a heart specialist, so I deal with heart failure and irregular heartbeats and strokes, the things that have been plaguing him. This is about transparency for voters. Voters deserve to know everything they need to know about the two candidates that they're going to choose from so they can make an educated decision. And John has not been willing to release his medical records. In a recent interview just this week, he refused 12 times in one interview to release information that everyone's called on him, from the major papers here in Pennsylvania to the New York Times, Washington Post. Just share your medical records so we know what's going on. And come out and debate me more than once at the very end of this campaign so voters can make a choice about your ability to serve.
Yep, and he makes 100%.
I just don't know why it's optional.
This is what happened. Yeah, when the state senates get so out of control that you can rewrite legislation that's been the law of the land, figuratively, forever, this is what you run into. You make it to where it's not mandatory. And, you know, back in past practice has been states like Oklahoma, like, why should we have 3 or 5 governor debates there when the governor usually wins? That's a Republican candidate by like 80%. But now it's like, we're going to run the shittiest, most progressive candidate possible, and we'll never be able to get receipts on them because they don't have to develop any kind of a strategy to debate a legitimate challenger on the Republican side. Mm-hmm. So it's something that essentially was created on both ends, you know, in Democrat and Republican states, to avoid wasting time and money and airtime, which is really expensive in these campaigns, especially with the market for advertising now. So, but yeah, Dr. Oz makes a lot of sense. I think he should use the same debate strategy. I mean, John Fetterman is already an elected official. He is a politician. He's like the lieutenant governor now. He was a mayor somewhere before that. And the fact of the matter is, the things that he has pushed legislation on, the people who he's let out of prison, I would probably stay away from his physical disabilities as much as you can. I mean, it's going to be on display anyway, so why hit it?
Well, has he just been a silent person in these positions, just like not doing anything, just like, you know?
No, he's been at the forefront. Before his stroke, he was an advocate for releasing murderers for no cash bail, for sexualizing the education system in Pennsylvania.
Legal drug dens where you can go and shoot up.
Yep, completely. Yes.
Well, we're great for San Francisco.
He's also been one of the largest advocates to end any kind of energy independence. He wants to end gasoline and fossil fuel usage completely. And he's been one of the strongest advocates for anti-fracking, our natural gas, way of refining that in the state of Pennsylvania as well. So he's been on board with all of that stuff for a number of years. And, you know, he's just kind of flown under the radar as like a sideshow. Now he's in, you know, one of the Senate seat races here, and it's just ridiculous that we're at this point. But I feel like Dr. Oz is going to win that seat, and I'm not really too worried about it. But I think debate strategy, you know, heading in with about 10 days left before they get on stage together, just stick to the issues. What are you bringing to the table? What are Democrat policies from the senator there currently who's retiring? What does it look like? What have they done for the state of Pennsylvania? Obviously, that state's hurting. And, you know, we get the parlay there with the governor's race. So 5'3" Josh Shapiro, his elongated track record of awful policies, ones that pretty much line up with John Fetterman at the state level, you know, the education stuff, the abortion stuff, ridiculous. He's like one of those up to the moment of birth abortion rights people.
Yeah.
And a lot of people forget, you know, there's a lot of voter suppression because of how extreme Doug Mastriano has been made to seem to the public, even though he's not. He's a veteran. You know, he's served in that state Senate for a long time. People kind of tie him into the conspiracy theorists for him, you know, working on the Stop the Steal events that follow the 2020 presidential election. That's neither here nor there. It doesn't make you anything other than someone who wanted an alternative view into how the election turned out.
Right.
There was millions of people across this country, millions of elected officials, some of our sitting congressmen now, you know, the Hawleys, the Cruises, the Rand Pauls, et cetera. They've all been in that narrative as well. And, the fact of the matter is, Doug Mastriano, his essential platform, without getting into like the bullet points of it, he wants to turn Pennsylvania into the Florida, economically, safety wise, things of that nature of the North, and educationally. And I think it's a perfect platform to run on because he runs on a good, wholesome, family centered, you know, campaign that I think has been one of the strongest in the country. He's just not received the financial support from the establishment of Republicans because they just don't know about the race. You know, it's one of those things where you just see these polls. They've been out suppressing Mastriano pretty much since day one. He was actually on Newsmax this morning. I saw the clip right before I got here, so I pulled it, and they're talking about this stuff right now. Let's hear it before we talk about that state a little bit more.
I went with Youngkin in Virginia last year, and with DeSantis 4 years in Florida. And I got it. was later. I think we're going to break out here. We don't see any evidence of this nonsense here. I do call these suppression polls. And when you focus on making phone calls to the Southeast and to a certain demographic, I mean, you're going to get a certain result. You know, in the end, he's a piper calls the tune kind of thing. I just see excitement. It's just incredible. I mean, Carl, I mean, it's amazing. I invite you. It's one of our rallies here. I mean, and it just keeps growing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I spent some time in Pennsylvania with you, Guy Rushenthaler, a couple other folks. So I love the electorate out there. I think they're great folks. Doug Mastriano, good luck, sir. Thank you for coming on.
And that's the thing. There are very few candidates in the country in any race. I would say the exclusions are probably like Carrie Lake and very few others that I can remember off the top of my head, that no matter where you go in any part of the state, whether it's like a Democrat stronghold or, you know, the conservative rural areas of your state, hundreds, if not thousands of people are showing up to hear them talk, to shake their hands. Doug Mastriano is one of them. He is live on Facebook nearly 24 hours a day. He does podcasts from his home. He's doing updates in the car. But every time he gets to a town hall, to someone's barn, to a bar, to a church, to a restaurant, when he wants to go talk at a school, there are lots of people there. And you don't see this in all the other races, especially the ones of the Democrats running right now. And I think it's that grassroots movement, based off the fact that he has not received the support that he deserves from the Republican establishment, that I think is going to be the X factor here in him probably winning. I mean, he did an event that supported the Latino communities in like South Philadelphia not too long ago, and there was hundreds of people there. It's just unprecedented for someone who's supposedly like this ridiculous right-wing loony that's running for the governor there to get any kind of support about that. But, you know, Latinos, especially in this midterm election, they know what this walkaway movement means for them. Yeah. It's like their wages are getting pushed down. Their jobs, like you're talking about Latinos that may have immigrated here the correct way and might be like permanent residents or U.S. citizens, they're losing jobs now to illegal immigrants.
Yes.
And their kids are going to school right now and being forced to learn at a curve because the classroom sizes have doubled in some of these major cities. Like the Pennsylvania is hurting right now with all the illegals they've sent in there. And Doug Mastriano's put out such a great platform as on day one things like exploding American energy independence, ending everything that's nasty in school, CRT, 1619, sexualization of kids, and all the other stuff that he wants to do, like the no cash bail and the crime stuff. He's writing executive orders to like make that stuff getting out of the state of Pennsylvania. I really think he's running one of the best platforms. He hasn't gotten the attention he deserves, but I think everyone should stay focused on this race right here. If you're listening and you don't live in the state of Pennsylvania, you should probably send at least $5 mm-hmm. to Mastriano's race right now, because if anybody needs it, it's definitely him.
Yeah, absolutely. That's an important race. I mean, there are so many important races, but Doug, the Pennsylvania governor race is probably one of the biggest ones, right? I'd say it's one of the biggest ones, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and how about Carrie Lake? What about this? What is it? Katie Hobbs, right? That's her opponent. Yeah, you saw the whole right. Katie Hobbs, right?
The Project Veritas angle.
Yeah. What's the undercover video of her openly talking about how she doesn't want to talk about politics with people she doesn't know, and then running away from the press. Oh, it's Project Veritas. Deceptive edited videos, which is all bullshit anyway. How do you recover from that in this race? And then on top of that, talk about how you will not debate Carrie Lake because you openly say in an interview that, well, she's going to talk over you and bring lies. And then they talk about how dangerous election deniers are. But again, they don't want to talk about the Democrat election deniers in 2016, two of the biggest being Hillary Clinton and Nancy Pelosi, with the mainstream media jumping right on board when Donald Trump was elected president, a legitimate president, I remind everybody. Mm-hmm. So how does... It doesn't, unless I'm missing something, they're just at this point in my head, Roan, there doesn't seem to be a contest in Arizona. No. I get that, but it just based off how this Katie Hobbs recovers. And we know, obviously, they were just sick leftists that eat everything they're spoon fed. But what is your take right now since that Project Veritas piece came out on Katie Hobbs, how the race is going to go?
I mean, she's a less retarded version of the same cut mold that John Fetterman is.
Yeah.
Even though she's been a state elected official for almost, a decade now, she's right. Completely inept and ill-equipped to do her job. She's gone on the record. She's been convicted by a jury in court twice for being racial in the workplace towards Latinos. That's 100% fact.
Did she call them Latinx?
Well, who knows what the hell she called them? Maybe she referred to them as breakfast tacos. We all know that's flown over.
Well, and if she's using the fact that she, or the quote unquote fact that she knows exactly what Carrie Lake's going to say, then prepare. Yep. Have an argument for all the stuff that you think Carrie Lake's going to bring up.
Well, she says that PBS supposedly is going to give her a platform where she can independently talk about the issues and bring up, I guess, a rebuttal for against Carrie Lake. But she won't step foot in the same room with her, obviously out of fear, because she
destroy her.
Which is funny because I don't know if you guys had saw, I shared it on my social media right before the show. She's going to be on fake State of the Union tomorrow with fake news Jake Tapper in back-to-back segments. So we're going to get Carrie Lake at the top of the show, and as soon as Carrie Lake's done, they're going to have Katie Hobbs in. Instead of having them just fucking come on remote together, they literally are going in back-to-back segments.
Amazing.
I know. It's
somebody that works there has got to be like on board and just be like, oops, I accidentally put them all in the same room.
Well, it's like the thing. Yes, I know they had set up stipulations for that, but I saw Carrie Lake posting on her social media. She's doing it 24 hours a day, too, as well. She doesn't sleep. She's just like us. Some of the deadlines that they asked for had already expired. So now they're trying to figure out if that crap's even going to happen. Carrie Lake's already won her race as long as she keeps her foot's to the floor on the gas pedal right now. She knows what she needs to do. My whole thing is how much, if not all, of the ticket she can get over the finish line. We asked her about it on the show 2 weeks ago when she was here. She does feel like she bears some of the responsibilities, knowing that she needs to run her own race, but how she surged in pretty much everything, the polls, popularity.
Yeah, she's leading.
Leading by a lot. Is she going to be the one that helps Blake Masters and the other, you know, state representatives and some of the U.S. House seats that Donald Trump has endorsed over the finish line? I personally think she's going to. And, I just think that there's not enough people out there. They're not going to be able to find votes for Katie Hobbs. She's just such an unattractive candidate. She hasn't been able to do anything right. And the fact of the matter is that she won't debate. All of the surprises that they tried to pull on Carrie, like, oh, she was a liberal. She was an Obama door knocker. She voted for Hillary Clinton. She used to have trans people at her house for parties, which was fake. And now she doesn't like the trans movement. You know, all that stuff just kind of like blew right off of her because.
Well, even if she did. Big deal.
Yeah, big deal. That's
maybe, she's probably not having the trans people that are advocating for children to have
stripper
in the room and irreversible, god dang, irreversible surgeries that will literally just fuck them up for life.
Yep. So, you know,
it's probably not those trans people at her house for barbecue. No,
and, you know, Hillary, or I'm sorry.
Ooh.
Carrie Lake was a she worked for a progressive news outlet for a number of years and you know, mingled with those people. But a big part of this election right now and a lot of the diversity that goes into the America First candidates across the country speaks volumes to the walkaway movement that's part of it. There are a lot of people who are in this race right now that are Republican nominees and even Trump endorsed who were former Democrats, former never Trumpers, people that thought America First was bullshit, like it was a gag line. And, you've had everybody from people like Carrie Lake to Senate nominees like J.D. Vance all realize, hey, when I saw what America First did for my state, for my district, it was the real deal.
How about what America First is going to do for America?
I like that.
Absolutely.
The whole point of it.
Well, we saw yesterday there was another senatorial debate. Not my favorite. This was my least favorite one of the entire cycle so far. It was the second one for Ron John out there in Wisconsin. Senator Ron Johnson debated his Democrat challenger. And, you know, Ron Johnson's never been a good debater. He's more of a committee chair. He likes to sit down with the experts. He likes to have PowerPoints and facts. And, you know, I don't know where this debate was or what like the voter demographic was in the state of Wisconsin, but it was one of the most liberal. I mean, every single answer he gave, they booed, and every single answer that the Democrat gave, they like cheered. I mean, even when they talked about border security, Ron Johnson talked about how, you know, not finishing Trump's wall has cost so much money so much more money than not building it. And the audience laughed and he's like, no, don't you understand? It's like, we've now let 5 million people into the country that the taxpayers are paying for. It's also made the fentanyl, you know, epidemic explode, and which goes into like the homeless thing, which goes into like affecting your children thing. And the people were like laughing in the state of Wisconsin. I was like, what the? Ron Johnson's probably going to win his race by 3.5 to 5 points. And I don't know where the hell they had that. It was like ridiculous. The thing I saw, CNN did a little piece afterwards, and I pulled a clip from it. So let's check it out.
Very clearly in the debate portion of this final push to Election Day, less than a month out, the latest two on both sides of Lake Michigan here in Wisconsin for the Senate, and of course here in Michigan for governor, with many issues in common, including the economy, crime, and of course abortion.
We drew names to determine who will go first.
Dueling debates in the Midwest, a round two for Senate in Wisconsin. This time in front of a live audience.
Take anything Mr. Barnes says with a huge grain of salt.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead. I would absolutely like to respond to that because. Well,
the same night, a round one for governor in Michigan. In Wisconsin, the debate centered on topics like the economy, abortion, and crime.
This is about making sure that law enforcement and communities have strong relationships. This is also about making sure we do the things that we know prevent crime from happening in the first place.
The problem with the whole defund movement, which she has been a big supporter of, it dispirits law enforcement. They're having a hard time recruiting members, yep. And we aren't going to have the law enforcement officers we're going to need to reduce crime.
Barnes has said he doesn't want to defund the police.
No police officers in this country were more dispirited than the ones who were present at the United States Capitol on January 6th.
Stop it.
Talk about support for law enforcement.
There we go.
It's not real.
I immediately and forcefully and repeatedly condemned the violence on January 6th.
With less than a month to Election Day, a statewide poll shows Johnson polling 6 points ahead of Barnes, 52% to 46% among likely voters, but still within the poll's margin of error. The poll also showed inflation as the top concern among voters.
I know what it's like to struggle to pay the bills. We need to give working class families some relief with a middle class tax cut. We need to make the child tax credit permanent.
I was warning about stagflation early in 2021. So the solution is stop the deficit spending, stop growing our debt.
Yeah, it's one of those. Mandela Barnes, that candidate there, he is probably the most radical progressive Senate candidate in the entire country by a lot. And he's one of the ones, because he's worked in state politics there, he's known how to make it sound like he's not presenting his actual takes. And he's going to say just whatever he needs to do to get votes and then vote the exact opposite and tank that state worse than it already is right now.
Yeah.
So.
What a piece of garbage. I mean,
did you hear the audience interaction there? It's like, yeah. Ron Johnson, who's a senior senator now, is, you know, extremely popular, always out in public, usually caters to large crowds, is like a man of the people. He goes and drink beers at bars. He barbecues outside of the Packers stadium every once in a while. And, you know, I just felt like, well, of course, it was a CNN sponsored debate. So it was probably a lot of people who watched that show. You know, they did mention across the lakes there, the other one, which is the last one we're going to touch on this week, it was Gretchen Whitmer versus Tudor Dixon. Now, this is probably one of the larger gaps that we're making up room right now. A lot of the polls have showed it's narrowed after this debate because, well, we all understand that Gretchen Whitmer was one of the top three worst governors throughout the pandemic. She bought into and drank the Kool-Aid and pushed on all of those ridiculous policies on her state longer than anyone else, believe it or not, longer than Gavin Newsom, longer than Governor Wolf in Pennsylvania, longer than Andrew Cuomo in New York. And
she started making her own Kool-Aid.
Yeah, when she would take trips to Florida while the rest of her state was locked down, or when her husband was like badge flashing at the Great Lakes there saying he wants to put his boat in the water when they literally had state police out there like patrolling to arrest people if they went out in the lake. So it was ridiculous of how awful. Plus, she's ridiculous. She's like post-birth abortion. She's like CRT. She wants she doesn't have any defense in the kids in regards to like the educational stuff in the school. The gender reassignment stuff, like she is just a horrible governor. And but they do see her as a potential higher ranking politician down the road. She's obviously a VP pick probably in the next election cycle after this one because they do want her to hold on to that state. But I just wish Tudor Dixon was a little bit more mean or a little bit more flamboyant in her answer. She reads very almost robotic. She talks like a college professor. And if she added a little bit of emotion to her you know, responses in this debate, I think she would even be narrowing that poll a little bit more. But she is the absolute mommy of the entire election cycle. I think we can all agree on that. Noah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Alan?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you just can't deny it. She is. And let's hear one of her responses here as she's hammering Whitner on her response to the pandemic.
The governor wants you to believe that she did listen to the experts, but we have the letter from the Nursing Home Association that said, whatever you do, don't send COVID positive patients into nursing homes. And yet the governor did. When Andrew Cuomo even backed off of this, Governor Whitmer doubled down. She even tried to hide the final report of the numbers of how many deaths we had. In fact, she's tried to hide a lot from this pandemic. She tried to hide, or she did hide effectively, why her Department of Health and Human Services director left. In fact, she even paid him off with a secrecy agreement. The same with unemployment. What a debacle to have $8.5 billion fraudulently sent out. Now I've got people bringing bills from the state up to me, begging me to forgive the unemployment that she's trying to get out back because she accidentally sent $8.5 billion out. And what about our students that she kept locked out of schools and wouldn't listen to parents when they begged her to let them play? Let them play. She wouldn't even listen.
You guys see what I mean in regards to, I just wish there was a little more oomph behind her.
More conviction, just more emotion. I think she would resonate with people more because people need to know that you give a shit, like, you know, show a little, I don't want to use the word anger, but just emotion. Just, you, it's this woman is the wicked witch. And, you know, get it out there. You have to fire, as they say, you have to fire up the base. And you should be able to do that without acting as if you're firing up the base. You know, I hope Tuna Dixon wins, but I just listening to that, 100% agree with you. She needs to work on her delivery. I think she needs to take a step back and a deep breath and realize, hey, I'm just an American trying to fight this war against the nefarious left, and I have all these emotions. It almost feels like I think she's trying to hold something back a little bit and try to be that prim and proper professional. You know what I'm saying? You follow me?
No, we're gonna, you know, I mean, we were able to cover five states today: Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, Georgia, and New York. You know, just off the top, and we'll definitely hit up a couple more next week, depending on what debates. I mean, we had the Wisconsin governor's debate. You have Tony Ebers there saying that, like, the open borders is fine. It's, you know, it's not really. It's a manufactured Republican talking point, and that illegals in his state should have the right to driver's licenses. There's almost 100,000 documented illegals in the state of Wisconsin. And you know, anyone that knows, one of the first things they make sure when you get your driver's license in any state, Alan, what is it?
Are you a registered voter? If not, check this box. We can help you.
Exactly. So, I mean, you really can't make this stuff up, and it's just...
Wait, are you saying that people that are here illegally that are already breaking the law aren't afraid to break more laws?
Yeah. Gasp.
Gasp?
Gasp. If I had balls, I'd be clutching.
Wait, hold on a sec. You think people know this?
Well, look, let's look at this. We know California, right? We know Gavin Newsom signed that into law about illegals getting their driver's licenses. And what did they just do in Colorado? The Secretary of State accidentally sent out 30,000 voter registration cards to illegal aliens who came here by breaking our laws, right? Am I right on that number?
Yeah, you're right.
So where else is this happening? Is it not being reported? What else is going to happen when these blue states turn around and send their illegal aliens who broke our laws coming here and are breaking our laws in this country are going to get driver's license and check that box? Are we going to have another big mistake and get all of these people registered to vote and then they're going to vote and you can't track them? And I mean, is this another way of the Democrats rigging and cheating and stealing in elections? Is this the big plan? I've been saying it from the start. That's why the border is open. It's there. It's the largest Democrat voting recruit drive in American history. I don't know. It's something doesn't smell right. And we have the Ron. We have the New York. I think the governor debate is coming up this week, right?
Yep.
Coming up, right?
Yeah, and we'll be taking a look at that. We'll be revisiting all the biggest battleground topics from here on out until Election Day. And then any of the other big news that kind of comes across the cycle. We touched on the January 6th stuff. I saw some stuff breaking late yesterday in the afternoon. Tony Blinken was down, you know, in Latin America talking about how they want to make the United States, Canada, and Mexico all one big country like Europe and the EU. That ain't ever happening. But I heard Matt Gaetz weigh in on that one. We'll cover it on, which is the last thing I want to, you know, touch on. Alan, I think we need to direct everyone that tunes into our Saturday show to our weekly, you know, where we go out and work hard every week on our regular podcast. Why don't you tell everybody where to find you?
So you can find me right here on Facebook, on Rumble, The Great Divide Podcast with Alan Jacoby. I'm live Monday, Wednesday, 6:30 p.m. Eastern, Friday, 9 p.m. Eastern. Sometimes I'll throw in a Thursday or Tuesday show. And obviously right here on The Great Steak Breakfast, Saturday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific, where we will bring you the most America First podcast in the country.
There's no debate about that. You can also check us out, the Steak for Breakfast podcast. We're on every downloadable platform. We're on the Patriot Podcast Network, obviously, where Alan hosts us as well. We're on places like Frank's Speech. You can go to steakforbreakfastpodcast.com. That's just a standard website where it uploads our audio version of our podcast. You don't have to do any downloads. You don't have to do any subscriptions. You just press play on any phone, computer, tablet, whatever, and it'll just stream the episode for you. However, iTunes and Spotify is where we'd like you to go. Subscribe to the show so you get those downloads every time a show is uploaded. And obviously, write a review and give us a 5-star rating. But besides that, I think pretty good job today, team, of breaking down some of these battlegrounds. And what do you think, Alan? We'll see everybody next week.
I think so. Another great episode of The Great Steak Breakfast. Listen, wherever you're listening right now, whether it's Facebook, Rumble, whatever it is, hit share, hit subscribe. Make sure you're sharing the content so we could beat the conservative hating algorithms out there on social media. Even though, you know, we despise social media, but it is a necessary tool for us. And I think that that wraps it up, boys. What do you think?
I think so. I mean, this is the only place you're going to hear the garrison button in the entire realm of conservative politics.
Nobody's stealing it from us yet?
Not yet.
No. I haven't heard it anywhere else. I think you guys got it, and I'm glad now we have it on Saturdays, which is awesome. All right, everybody, until next week. Great Steak Breakfast.
Thank you, guys.
We'll see you all next week.